Welcome, friends of Soul Kitchen, to a new episode. Today, I'm going to interview a man that I'm nowadays collaborating with, because he is the founder and CEO of the Irisera Podcast Lab, the studio where we're sitting today. Recently, I joined this studio, and it's pretty amazing. It really helps me to upgrade my podcast game. And Yarin is also a filmmaker and a father and a husband and a server, amongst many other things. Yarin, welcome today to your own studio. How does it feel to be interviewed in your own studio?
Actually, it's rather amazing, I have to say. I love it. In the beginning of my journey of opening this place, I was sitting here in the beginning alone, and then I started to have some guests, and I forgot how nice it is to be seated here and talk with no disturbance, with nothing, and just, you know, be in the flow of having a conversation.
So what is the main difference for you between being in the spotlight that you're sitting now, and sometimes when you're behind the spotlight, when you're editing and recording for people like myself?
Wow. Sitting here is fun, and being over there is work. Mm-hmm. Is something I do for... I'm sitting here because I like to help people, not mm-hmm. because I like to do the technical work I do. I like to bring people the accessibility to such a, you know, to such an experience. So this is why I'm sitting there. When I'm sitting there, I'm not enjoying the technical aspect of it, although I have good technical abilities. I'm enjoying that I'm giving other people access. This is why I'm sitting there. When I'm sitting here, it's pure fun. I'm enjoying it.
That's a nice explanation. So you touched upon what motivates you to do this work. So why have you decided to enter the field of video podcasting? Like, what's your bigger purpose behind it?
I think if I was a filmmaker for quite some time, and I noticed that I was involved in many productions, in film productions, and I was involved in a lot of little corporate videos, little corporate jobs, little commercials. There was a time about 10 years ago, let's say, that video really started to... there was almost like a gold rush in social media. Everyone needed video. Everyone needed a little commercial. Everyone needed a video presence on their social media. And I opened a production company and gave people the access to this medium. But I noticed that after investing countless hours and designing and writing and preparing and executing and making a production, making a video, that good amount of that... of the project, even if it's a good project, even if the script is good, even if the concept is good, didn't get any the amount of attention they needed. And I started to figure out that producing videos, producing content, I mean, after a while, I'm talking about after a few years I was doing that. Of course, some of the things that was exploded and got really viral, but some of the things never got any traction. So I started to understand that producing content needs to be easy. It needs to be like a serving. It needs to be like almost like you go to a simple burger restaurant, order a burger and fries, and that's it. You know what you get. It's easy. Everything is done for you. So this was my idea, to make it very accessible, make it very easy for the client, for the consumer, to come and produce content, you know, without, take out all the noise, the background noise, mm-hmm. take out all the location scouting, the lighting, the big trucks with cameras, whatever. Make everything accessible, small, and easy. So if you want to tell a story, and if you want to create some content, you can do it easily.
And I agree, it's indeed very easy, because for me... I always thought it was quite a hassle to have a studio, and then suddenly I have access to it. And why have you decided to shift gears from like filmmaking to podcasting?
It's still filmmaking, mm-hmm. you know, what we're doing here on a certain level. There are cameras, there's lights, there's microphones. It's the same thing that happens on a film set. Podcasting is an umbrella term. What is podcasting?
That's a good question. I feel it's sharing information through audio, and nowadays also through video. And you can either do solo episodes or you can invite with guests.
Yeah.
And it's about providing maybe intimate conversations that are more intimate than maybe the general information.
Mm-hmm. But for example, I had here a filmmaker from Norway. Mm-hmm. She was doing a project about plastic recycling in Norway, something about sustainability. And she had a guest here, and she was conducting this podcast, mm-hmm. as a part of her documentary that she's doing. So she was just using the space, the same as we are using now. And she did an interview, 1 hour interview with one of her characters in her movie. So would that be considered as a podcast? Would that be considered as an interview? So there is not a definite, from the way I look at it, there is not a definite line. This is a podcast. This is an interview. This is part of a documentary. Mm. So it's kind of like, you know, it could be interpreted from a different angles. But from the way I look at it, this medium of creating content, of creating media, of creating images, videos, sounds, is a way to tell a story. Okay, it's a way to share knowledge, or to I would say memorize some ideas, mm-hmm. that could be transmitted through generations, and this is just a medium for storytellers,
yeah.
to kind of create. This is how I see it.
I see. So you make a good point. So I thought you shifted from filmmaking to podcasting, but you're actually still into filmmaking.
Yeah, exactly.
And the lines are a bit blurry sometimes. And how do you, what trends do you see in podcasting? So one of them is, I think, short form video content.
Yeah.
But can you elaborate a bit on the trends that you see?
People spend a big amount of the population on the Western world spend most of their time on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's LinkedIn, YouTube, or WhatsApp, or, you know, it doesn't really matter what social media, what platform, they are all kind of the same. But most of the people, you spend a good amount of their day on them. If it's for hooking up with people, you know, seriously, people, a single man I have here a lot, this is what they do, you know, this is how they get to know men, get to know women, this is how women get to know men.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for looking for jobs, it's LinkedIn. If it's for looking for events, for things to do, experiences. So this is where you hang out most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the trend in short form is taking a big dish, which is a full-on interview, full-on podcast, or a full-on film, and making it like a little sushi bite, you know, like a little teaser. And it's the reason I'm saying sushi bite, because it will be easier. It's like a small little bite, you know, that will be easier for the consumer to digest, instead of committing to a big 1 hour project, 1 hour mm-hmm. interview. First, they see those two gentlemen having a conversation. But if they're saying something smart and interesting, they'll say, maybe, you know, I'll invest an hour and half an hour, see what these guys are talking about, you know? So this is the repurposing,
yeah.
of the long form video, the long form podcast into short form bits.
Yeah. And I'm curious, because you could say that the short videos might lead to people watching or listening to the longer episode. But is it also true nowadays that it's kind of a replacement, that people just look at the short form because people have a short attention span?
I think that it's there is two ways to answer, because it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. Mm-hmm. Because those the platform that are most addictive, the platform that we spend most of the time, which is Instagram, TikTok, are pushing the users to have short attention span, to mm-hmm. have this ADHD. They're scrolling from things to things, and it's this is how they push them. I'm not sure the people who watch them really have a short. How did you say that?
Short attention span.
I'm not 100% sure they have, but when they're engaging in this behavior of scrolling through Instagram or scrolling through TikTok, they kind of like have this, you know, this short attention behavior, I would mm-hmm. say. So this is in regarding to that. But on the other angle, if I can look at that, I think it's more it helps for the content creator to captures the potential viewer mm-hmm. imagination if he only expose, let's say, 20 or 30 seconds of pure gold or something which is really remarkable, and then kind of luring the potential viewer into their world and into their full podcast on Spotify or YouTube. Mm-hmm. So it's more like a marketing mechanism, yeah. In that sense. I don't see it any other difference. So it's a good technique for someone to bring more people into his world using short form video. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. And short form video content, I think, is part of a broader formula that you have developed.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you share a bit about it?
Yeah, I developed an editing method mm-hmm. that is called the smart editing method. I call it the smart editing method because it's a smart way, okay, for the editor to identify what is important and what is not. Okay, and to jump straight to what could be potential trending topic or what could be potential interesting things that the algorithm will appreciate. Mm-hmm. And also throughout the video, also remove or alter some of the things that being said to make it more interesting and more precise than how it was said in the original recordings. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily only fixing the ums and the ums and the oh wait a minute, I'm just thinking about something. It's more about almost restructuring the content in a way that the viewer would more likely to engage with it.
Yeah. So what is the formula again? It's the full formula.
Oh, the full formula.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, this is a SMV, so smart, a short form video, SFV, short form video.
Short form video, yes.
Plus smart edits.
Plus smart edits, okay.
Times collaborations.
Is?
Equals growth.
I see. So you talked about the short form video content. You talked about the smart editing, removing and reconstructing certain pieces of the content. And then the collabs. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So everything we are talking about is... So imagine the social media platforms is like a big jungle, mm-hmm. okay? And imagine we are in this jungle trying to survive, okay? Or trying to succeed, you know? And I'm not getting it too philosophical about why I chose that specific metaphor, but imagine it. This is the situation we are in. And let's say the short form video is an animal, okay, or something we need to gather or hunt or something like that. And the smart edit would be the tools, you know, like the tool, the technique or something. And the collaboration would be the communal effort, you know, how we do it together. You know, there's certain people that are going to run from this direction and there's certain people that are going to run from that direction. And then together we will create more success or more chances of success and not losing the prey, not losing what we want to do. So the collaborations is a really important part of the strategy, really important part of the formula, because when people collaborate with each other, so for instance, if we are producing this content together, although it's your personal content, but you're engaging with me in my social media profiles, we would definitely have more exposure if we will collaborate on that. So it makes like a win-win for me and for you. So there's no reason why I shouldn't collaborate unless you post something that I don't want to expose. Mm-hmm. And then I was just wouldn't collaborate with that.
Yeah.
And it's also you're also being rewarded by the Matrix. You're also being rewarded by the social media platforms for collaborating because they want us to collaborate because then they will reconfirming the fact that we are spending more time together on the platform.
Yeah. So collaboration, you make use of each other's following, but also the social media platforms, they encourage it. So short form video, times smart editing, times collaboration is growth. And if you look into podcasting, what distinguishes, let's say, excellent podcast hosts or let's say people that grow their podcast? What are some key secrets to success, so to say, and next to the formula that you've described?
The biggest key to succeed is choosing the right guests. Because, and again, I'm referring to this formula, okay? Because when I'm saying succeed, I just want to confirm, what do you mean succeed?
Yeah, maybe growing the podcast, or what's your definition of growth?
I'm talking about downloads, followers on Instagram. So it's not, if you're doing something for your audience, your immediate way to test and see the growth would be increase in downloads, increase in listeners, increase in likes, increase in engagement. Yeah, this is easy data. I recorded something, my partner loved it, and you know, we were happy about it together, and no one listened to it. Woody Allen once said, if you're making films, which again, films and podcasts eventually it's the same. If you're making films for yourself, you're going to end up being broke. So there's need to be a financial mechanism into it. So you need to think about your audience. So going back to my answer, your guest. Mm-hmm. So you need to think, okay, I'm hosting this show. I'm making it for my audience. What they would love to hear. What kind of people they would be interested or thrilled that I'm bringing on and interviewing. I'm doing it for them. I need to pick the right person that will be interesting enough that my audience, that my people would like to listen. And then there is a trace back to the formula that you collaborate with that guest. And if he has some following and if he is a serious person with some following behind him or some exposure to him, you could also lean on his marketing abilities to push your product together.
Yeah. So guest is number one. Choosing the right guest is number one. And what's kind of the second factor that distinguishes a successful podcast?
I think that if you really want to succeed, you really have to enjoy it.
Mm.
You have to enjoy yourself. Many people would sit here and say, you know what you need to do? You need to niche down. You need to find your niche. You need to talk about surfing. You need to talk about photography. You need, but it's important, yeah, but people tend to change their habits,
their interests,
their friends, their place of living. Everything changes all the time. Everything is dynamic. So yeah, it's important to have a niche, but it's more important that you will enjoy it. It's more important that you would enjoy the craft of creating a story, the craft of recording a podcast. You enjoy a company of another person, recording with him. You enjoy this flow.
Yeah. So it's finding the right guest is the joy, maybe even more important than niching down. And if you would add, let's say, a third and last factor, which one?
Yeah, I would definitely put the enjoyment on the first.
On the first one.
Yeah. This is the finding the right guest would be probably like second, but it's like a strategic, it would be like more strategy.
Yeah.
Strategize it well. I've seen you do it really well. Like you really have like a lineup of guests, you know, everything is organized, you know, oh, I'm going to bring this one and this one and they're going to speak Dutch. And it's really a key thing. The guest thing is key.
Yeah.
So three and four.
Or maybe three, maybe one more.
Yeah, I think it's enough. I'm going to give you three and four.
Okay. Three and four. I'm curious now.
So authenticity.
Authenticity. Okay.
Okay. Be yourself.
Be yourself.
So authenticity is under be yourself.
Yeah.
It's just basically the same thing. You want to be yourself. You don't want to be too pretentious. You don't want to be someone that is hiding behind something. It's really, the camera is not lying. The camera can detect that, you know. If you're not authentic and you're not real, people are not stupid. They will notice that in a blink of an eye, and they just lack interest in that. People want to see real people. People prefer to see two real people talking about bullshit than to see two fake people talking about the most important thing in the world.
Okay, so authenticity is really key.
Yeah, really key. And the fourth thing, I would invest in a good podcast studio or in a good setup, because
preferably near the ocean.
Yeah. No, because I sincerely think that I wouldn't compromise the audio, for sure. The video, the image part is secondary. The audio really needs to be good. Annoying noises or not a good audio recording could be super, super disturbing for the person. Could be the most interesting part of the world, but if there is noises in the audio, or it's distorted or something, is just people cannot listen to that more than 10 or 20 seconds. It's just completely banging your head. Whether if it's the image is kind of like a bit grainy or not as sharp or something like that, this is more forgiving, I would say.
I see. So it's joy, finding the right guest, authenticity, and investing in equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a really good summary. And so we talked a bit about podcasting, and in the past you've been into filmmaking. So I'm curious to learn a little bit more about your past life. Can you share a bit about where you came from? I think it's Israel.
Yeah.
And then why you moved to Australia. So what can you share about your geographical developments?
In Israel, first, so I started surfing. Mm-hmm. I grew up on the beach in northern Tel Aviv. And it's a beautiful stretch of coast. It's a bit urbanized, but it's still beautiful. We have very long summers, and it's very easy to start surfing there because the waves are, they are existing, but they are very small and very forgiving. And water are very warm. And I started very young. I think I was 14. So I started surfing, and it became a big thing of who I am. And in Israel, most of the population, when they reach 18, they need to go to the military. They need to go for a military service. It's a mandatory thing in Israel. Mm-hmm. So. Of course, I went to the military as a good Israeli boy. and as soon as you finish this experience, which is, I don't want to say traumatizing, but definitely shaking, you know, but definitely like slapping you in the face in a quite young age, you need a good reset, you know. You need to go with your friends, you need to travel the world. So most of the people, as soon as they finish the military, guys and girls, they go on for a trip, we call it after the military trip, after the military adventure. Most of the people go for 3 months, 6 months. So we went, group of surfers from my hometown, we went to Australia. And I fell in love with Australia. And it's an amazing country. It's a beautiful country. I travel on the East Coast. And I finished my that journey, went back to Israel, and everything I was occupied with since I came back from Australia. So I went back around 21 and then I came back around 22. But when I came back, everything I thought about it was how I can go back to Australia. This was the main thing that I was thinking. What should I do? How should I go back? I need a good reason. I need a work. So I found this college university that teaches film in Byron Bay, which is one of the spots I love the most. And I could somehow convince my parents to support me in my studies. I never had anything with film besides watching some films, you know, like a normal person. I never had anything for it. I was never editing. I was a creative person. I was entrepreneurial young person, but I was not, like, I couldn't say I was a film person when I decided. I decided to go there because of the geographical reason, because it's a beautiful town with surfing and everything. So this is why I moved there. And my parents, I was lucky enough that my parents could sponsor this for me. And that's it. I was there for 3 years and came back to Israel in my late 20s. And it was a bit confusing to come back after a few years in Australia, but after I think about half a year or a year, I started working in the film industry, and it was amazing. It was beautiful. I worked for a few years as a lighting guy, as a cameraman, as all kinds of works on film sets, and around after I'm married. And we had my first daughter. We had a loss in our family, in my wife's family, and it shook our life a bit. It was really sudden, and we kind of recalibrated our life, and we kind of decided that it's like it's now or never kind of like mentality. We should live. You know, like YOLO, kind of like you only live once, you know, let's do it. Let's do something new. And we ended up here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a lot has happened in your life. Another topic that I'm interested in, one thing is that we have in common is our path towards sobriety. I've been sober now from alcohol for more than 2 years, nearly 2.5 years. And you mentioned earlier that you don't drink alcohol either. So can you share a little bit about your decision to do so, how long it has been, what it has meant for you?
I think being a non-alcohol drinker person, it's a superpower. Being a person who doesn't drink alcohol, it's like a superpower. I believe that if you are going into an event, a social event, and everyone around you are starting, you know, to get on the booze, have shots and drinks, and you know, they think that, oh, I'm becoming loose, I'm becoming nicer, I'm becoming... And actually, you have a superpower. Your sobriety is a superpower. And suddenly you see these little subtle things that, you know, you're like, oh, he's a bit drunk, you know, he's like, you know, he's a bit like off, you know, he's a bit like, you know, I don't know how to exactly pinpoint that, but you know what I'm saying. When someone is drunk, he's drunk. And it's a superpower. And the next day you're sharp. It's just, it's amazing. I can't see my life without being a sober. I cannot see myself going back into drinking.
I agree.
So this is from that, like, summarized. Yeah. Sobriety is superpower. Mm-hmm. And the reason I stopped it because I felt I had too much. That's simple as that. I felt I had too much. About 10 years ago, I had a big, big night out with friends. Had a massive blackout. Started researching the internet. Found a drinking coach, Australian guy, and I immediately connected to his accent because I like the Australians. But he lives in America and he has a really cool story about how he stopped drinking and about his project or his he has this coaching thing around it. It's called 30 Days No Alcohol Challenge. And I was like, I was hooked, you know, I was interested and I was watching his videos and this is how I finished. It was way, way easier than I could imagine. I thought when you're in it, you're like, how could I live without having a glass of beer? How could I do that? And I think a month later or a couple of months later, I was like, it's actually really easy, you know? It's actually so much easier than I thought.
It's an interesting shift, right? I remember when I was still drinking, you're like, oh, but if I stop, what to do with Christmas? What to do with the birthday? What to do with the wedding? All these things until there's this shift. For me, first I quit drinking for 6 months, then I started drinking for 2 years, and then I really decided to quit. Did you have this awakening, a sudden decision, or had it been more of a gradual path towards this realization?
I was abusing alcohol for a good amount of time. I wasn't. It's a bit difficult to. It's very. The definition of an alcoholic, I'm not sure what it is, but the way I perceive it, I wasn't an alcoholic. I wasn't waking up in the morning and drinking. But I'm not sure this is the definition of alcoholic. I'm thinking that in the United States, an alcoholic person is someone that has X amount plus X amount of beers a week or something like that. So I'm not sure if I was falling into that category or not. I'm not sure. But I was definitely abusing the substance. By abusing, meaning that I was definitely going on to weddings, going on to parties, going out to dinners, and definitely getting smashed. Definitely getting, you know, spending too much money, occupying too much thought. Oh, there will be drinks. We should bring drinks. We should have this. Spending, you know, time on it, risking myself, drinking, drive, you know, stuff like that. Stupid things. So definitely abusing the substance. And so I was abusing it for quite some time. So I was thinking, you know, after a while, after a few years, like, so let's say I was starting to drink when I was about 17, 18. So when you're in the military, you start drinking in Israel. And around 31, I stopped. So I think around 27, so 3 or 4 years before, I was like, you know, this is a bit too much, you know. This is a bit too much. Should I give up? Should I? There was a voice, you know, in my head telling me, like, something is not taking you on the right path, you should. But when I decided, it was a sudden thing. I was drinking the night before. I was drinking the week before, and I didn't thought about quitting. And then that night was like, okay, woke up in the morning, woke up actually in the afternoon, and had basically almost no memory from the night before. And I was like, this is too much. I don't want this in my life. What should I do now?
And then you quit.
Yeah.
And then you quit.
It's, again, it's not exactly like that, because I stumbled into that person, mm-hmm. to that coach. His name is James Swanick. Mm-hmm. Watched his videos. And I couldn't be more grateful for... It was a simple video. It was like this, you know? He was standing in front of a camera, telling his story, really convincing, really authentic, really cool story. Everything was... And I was like, this is for me. He's talking to me, you know? He wasn't talking to me. He wasn't like an Alcoholic Anonymous kind of like vibe. It was it was like, you know, you're ambitious, you're young, you're going out, you're having drinks. He was like talking about, like, you know,
talking to you.
Yes. Yeah, he wasn't talking to me as like a poor person that, you know, that like lie on the gutter and drink himself to death. This wasn't the picture he was describing. He was describing a normal person that is not fulfilling his abilities because he's drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I think that's a beautiful way of saying it, because when someone speaks to you, you feel more motivated. And to what extent, because sometimes I don't want to preach too much about it, but sometimes when I'm in a social situation, I order sparkling water and other people order maybe wine, then maybe they ask and then I share. And then some people say, I also want to quit, or they say, I want to quit smoking, or then the discussion starts about addictive behavior. So to what extent do you share it with people, or to what extent do people inform, ask you how it is in daily life?
Most of my people, first I have to say that in the last, so it's again an action leading to another action and leading to another action. So in the beginning, it's awkward, you know, it's like, yeah, Yaron, he's a guy that drinks all the time with us. He's our drinking buddy. What happened? Come on, have a drink. Come on, I get you a chaser. Come on, you know, like a chaser is like a little shot. But then this drinking habit is dissolving. And so, you know, so does your drinking friends, mm-hmm. because you realize, okay, I was meeting those people only because we were drinking buddies. Or... some of them are, you can really still appreciate your friendship, but you meet in, you know, in a different scenarios. You go to the movies, you're just gonna work out together, go for whatever, you do different things, you know, and then your whole life shifts around it. So you suddenly, after a year or 2 years, you have more friends that enjoy talking, that enjoy meditation, that enjoy swimming, that enjoys hiking, that enjoys activities that enriches you, that makes you feel more grounded, more connected, and your whole social structure is changed. So people are not the new people in my life that I meet, the connections I have now. Nobody even raise an eyebrow. Nobody even, I'm just like, I'm not drinking, I'm an alcohol free. And they're like, oh, whatever, you know, because it kind of like makes sense. Because the people around me are these kind of people.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, and if someone is intrigued or is, you know, have question, usually it will be because he wants to.
Yeah.
He wants to do the step and he wants to do the thing. It's not like, hey, you know, hey, you're a pussy, you're not drinking beer.
No, it's when someone wants to make a change.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not I what I tell people, if we are talking about it and I feel like there is something, you know, that the burning inside and they want to, I give them a little rundown of my events, or a little summary of how it happened to me and how it's so beneficial to me and how much I would never go back into drinking alcohol. But I'm not pushing too hard, because I know for a fact that if someone wants to stop drinking, they need to decide it themselves. It doesn't matter how much I will talk to them about it. And I'm saying that. I'm saying, look, I'm giving like a little summary, and then I'm like, in the end of the day, it's all about you making the decision. It's not about me, how much I'm going to talk here. I can talk here for 5 hours. I can talk here for 2 minutes. If you're sold, you're sold. Yeah. If you don't want to do it, don't want to do it. And it's, it's a game changer.
It is a game changer. It really changed my life. And it changes also how you indeed spend your time, from going to parties more to spending time in nature. So I'm very happy that I discovered it. So if someone is listening and wants to pursue this path of sobriety but is not yet there, what's like your one tip for what to do or where to start?
I have to tell you, I'm really enjoying this. I'm really enjoying the podcast, you know. I'm really you're a great podcaster.
I'm happy to hear.
First, search on Google James Swanick 30 days no alcohol challenge.
Okay.
I am still in contact with him. He became a big coach.
So James Swanick.
James Swanick, okay. 30 days no alcohol challenge. Okay. You can look up for him online.
Okay.
We rarely message each other on Instagram. We not really know each other personally, but he posted some things and I comment whatever. This is the first thing I would say. James Swanick, 30 days no alcohol challenge. And if you want to somehow make a shortcut, just think about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you want to make a shortcut and you don't want to look for him on Google. So just think about it like that. From the age of 21 or 18, depend on your country, when did you start to drink? Around the time you started to drink, how long was the period of which you had a drink and then you didn't have even another drink?
Mm-hmm.
So usually you have a couple of beers on, you know, Friday or whatever, Saturdays, and then the next time you have drink could be a Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, and then you rest, and then maybe the next day you have a casual drink on Wednesday, and then maybe you have another casual drink on the weekend. So it's kind of like, you know, self perpetuating kind of thing. But how long was the longest time you didn't had? Maybe you 10 days you had antibiotics and you ditch it out.
Yeah.
Have you ever had 30 days? If you never had 30 days without drinking a drop of alcohol, not a glass of wine, not a glass of beer, nothing, just do a 30 days sober completely. No alcohol, nothing. No alcohol those 30 days at all. And I assure you that you will feel better by the end of those 30 days. And good chances you wouldn't relapse. You wouldn't want to go back because you would feel better. You would have more money in your pocket, more clarity in your head, more quality sleep time, more quality wake up time, quality relationships. So just try to stop for 30 days, full 30 days.
Yeah. So this is a first step in which you can already experience the benefits.
Yeah.
Without making it too ambitious for a first timer.
Don't think about it as climbing on Mount Everest. It's like a little hill, you know, 30 days. Just start with the 30 days, you know, a little challenge.
Amazing. So James Swanick and then the 30-day no alcohol challenge. Thank you for sharing that wisdom. I still have a question about your filmmaking career, even though I'm aware we're still into filmmaking. But if you look back your entire filmmaking, excluding this podcast, what has been your highlight in your career? Highlight project or moment?
So when I came back from Australia in the first year, I had an Israeli girlfriend immediately. Actually, we had a bit of a long-term relationship. And when I was still in Australia, and then I came back and we were together for about 6 months or a year. And there was a television show on Israeli TV. It's called Yellow Peppers. It's about this autistic kid that his parents are moved to the desert in Israel. There is a big part of his desert with trying to grow. There's a big thing in the desert in Israel, agriculture in the desert and stuff like that, utilizing the heat with what I don't know a lot about it, but so this like was a show about this autistic kid, this family with an autistic kid moving in to the desert, trying to comprehend the challenge of living with an autistic, beautiful autistic child, kid, mm-hmm. in a bit of a weird community in the desert while establishing a technology agriculture business in the Negev desert in Israel. And there was a first season. This was the first season. And we used to watch that, me and my ex girlfriend, whatever. And it was really beautiful. It was really well filmed. It was really touching story. And it looked from me, we were at her little studio apartment and we used to watch this on her television. And it looked, although Israel is such a small place, but it looked like such a far, far thing, you know, this television show. It looked like something, you know, on the screen, like something like out of this, you know, out of my scope. And about a few months later, anyway, we broke up. But this is out of topic and I started my film industry business. Started from all kinds of little jobs, and about a year or a year and a half, maybe 2 years, I'm not exactly sure, between a year and 2 years after that, they filmed the second season of that show. And I was working on that show as a technical person, nothing too fancy, just a technical person, but I was really, you know, seeing all the actors and everyone from that show. And I wasn't doing a big deal at that thing, but for me, it was a huge accomplishment. It was like almost like a manifestation, kind of like, you know, like because I could see how it's like far, but it was like far and close at the same time. And I really wanted that. I really wanted to be part of that creation of that world, you know, and I thought about it and I wasn't really specifically thinking about that show, but I remember when I got the call to be like, hey, would you like to be camera assistant on that show? I was like, wow, you know, this was like, and it wasn't a huge achievement. I did bigger things and more sophisticated things. I mean that I was more involved with, you know, instead of like changing the lens of the, like being the second camera, assistant guy, you know, anyways, like very technical thing, but just the fact that I was there for me was like a huge achievement, huge, huge achievement. I felt on the top of the world.
Amazing. It's amazing. I can feel the energy when you talk about it. And sometimes these moments are stepping stones to next moments. So during this project, did you build some sort of connection that brought you to next thing, or was it more standalone?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It made me, I met this, I met this crew of people, which some of them I knew, but some of them were completely new. And so I hooked up with a couple of people and you know, it's like the rodeo. It's like when this project ended, I moved with them to the next one and to the next one and to the next one. And it's just kept on building from there until I had my own little production studio. I honestly think that this little thing was better.
Yeah, it was better than what
yeah, but the rest was like, yeah, it was like I was on a path, you know. Mm-hmm. I was on a road already before. I was like, you know, struggling to find the path, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like like you know, you're lost, your campus is not working, whatever. And I was like, drifting, you know, being a driver on one show, being like a production assistant, like whatever, all kinds of little things, you know, wasn't really nailing that. But when I was on this show, when I started working with them, I really felt like I found my path again. Actually, quite similar to the feeling I have right now when I have this studio.
Yeah. Because what are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I think I found like a new path, connected, close. But it's like I wasn't feeling as... I felt for a few years that I wasn't... So we moved in here and I had to give up on my previous life. I could do some remote works that relate to the film industry, relate to some editing, some stuff for advertising agencies in Israel, but nothing was as tangible, as I couldn't feel it, you know? And when I opened this studio, I could really feel it, you know? People are coming, people are talking about it, people want to be part of it, you know? Yeah. And I really felt like, oh, this is a new path, yeah. Something is new.
So you're feeling the buzz and you found a nice sweet spot, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's true because you create value that is it's too much hassle for an individual podcaster to create. And there are so many podcasters nowadays. So yeah, I can see that. Well, one question I ask everyone, you've heard it before. This podcast is about recipes for life.
Yeah.
How old are you actually?
41.
41, okay. So you have 41 years of life experience. So if you look back at all these decades of experience, like what is your recipe for life?
I can swear to you that I thought about it and I knew you're going to ask me that. And I had an answer, but I forgot it.
Oh, you forgot it?
I was like, oh, he's going to probably ask me that because you're asking that everyone.
Yeah.
And I forgot it.
You can come up with it spontaneous.
Yeah, I think about put your never give up on your dreams.
Never give up on your dreams. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that recipe, Yaron. It was such a pleasure to meet with you. And thank you also for using the studio.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that. It was needed.
Thank you.